And we are turning our attention to the United Kingdom and certainly quite a bit going on there, much of it related to Brexit. Very happy to be joined as we continue our conversation here by Mohammed Almazi, who's a writer and editor of The Interregnum. Mohammed, thank you so much for being with us here on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, coming off the Labour Party conference, a number of people saying Jeremy Corbyn's speech there was his best that he'd given in some time. You know, a lot of questions over when or where there could be a general election, over whether or not there could be some sort of unity government that could replace Boris Johnson through a vote of no confidence. But that seems to be hung up on the issue of Jeremy Corbyn being the head of said unity government, which many people, not many, but some seem to be opposed to in various parties. So, I mean, I'm curious where you think this thing stands here now in terms of where Brexit is. I mean, it does feel that that there's almost a bit of stasis in the positions on the various sides at the current moment.
There is. When I was at the conference, there was a very big push to get the Labour Party to officially endorse Remain as its position. And people did push for that. And I did interview people who were in favor of that. You could see the numbers in terms of those demonstrating in Brighton, which is near the beach. We're definitely in favor of that. However, in the end, the vote at the Labour Party conference ended up going the way that the National Executive Committee ended up pushing, arguing for, which was that the Labour Party officially will remain neutral on the matter of Brexit, although individual members can make their individual positions known. So somebody can say, if they're asked, yes, I support Remain or I support leaving. But as a party, that is now official Labour Party position, is that the party will remain neutral and that if they're in government, they'll offer both positions and argue and present the cases for both Remain and for exit. And for obvious strategic reasons, because while the majority of the Labour Party membership may be in favour of Remain, it does seem clear that the majority of the electorate within the areas that the Labour Party seeks to secure voted leave. So you have a bit of a contradiction there that needs to be resolved or perhaps can't be resolved other than what they've done thus far.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a very prescient point. I mean, it does feel like Labour is in a tricky situation given the way the things have sort of cut across issues at the conference. I mean, it seems to me that also as well, and certainly a theme of Corbyn, you know, prior to the conference and also in the conference itself, is trying to reorient the sort of political discussion to not be strictly around the issue of Brexit, but sort of in or out of the European Union to get people thinking about what kind of government can best deliver on issues of concern, you know, whether it be transportation, healthcare, workers' rights, and so on and so forth. And, you know, I'm curious your take on how that, you know, sort of view was received and how it played out in the Labour Party conference. And how important do you think that is to the positioning of Labour in, let's say, an upcoming general election?
I would say that is where the strength does lie. In fact, that was very important. Where you did see unity or people speaking about unity, that's a term I heard a lot, was over opposition to certain Tory policies, or policies of the right-wing government of power, you know, the Conservative and Unionist Party, also known as Tories, but also being in favor of specific policies. So there were a number of policies where, whether it's about guaranteeing sort of accommodation, so low-cost, you know, building low-cost housing, public accommodation, tackling climate change, but with investment in green technology for green jobs, or, of course, a subject I wrote about, the sort of historic position on immigration, which is it is historic for this country, on the labor movement. That's where you find the strongest support. And as multiple observers pointed to me, that's where they think their strongest position is. So that, you know, in or out, what are we in favor of? What do we support? And when they push the policies that separate them, not only from the Tories, but also from the right wing of the Labour Party, if you want to call them the neoliberal branch, say like that of Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, previous prime ministers, when they do that, you find that those particular policies that they argue in favor of tend to be, you know, tend to have quite a fair amount of support. With, you know, polling shows that the kinds of policies in the Labour Party manifesto, especially when you separate them from Labour, if you just say, what do you think of these policies, including nationalisation of railways, nationalisation of utilities, and you could argue, well, nationalisation is not really what they want. They want to bring things under more democratic public control. But even when the polling is straight up uses terms, old school language of nationalisation and state control, there's overwhelming support across not just the country, not just England, but the overall kingdom for nationalisation. We're talking about high 60s, 70s, in some cases, even 80%. You know, keeping the NHS public has, of course, the highest. But even the weapons industry, there's overwhelming support for that to be under, or majority support for that to be under public control rather than private hands. So that's one of the reasons you see so many attacks, in my opinion, against Corbyn on a personal basis, or smears against him and his supporters, is because if people start debating the actual policies, they find that the policies are generally quite popular. And I think we can discuss the historic immigration vote if you want to in a bit.
Yeah, well, you know, I certainly that thing seems relevant. But one thing I definitely wanted to pick up on that you just mentioned in terms of smears against Corbyn, you know, many of them, I would say at least, seem to be centered around the accusations of the so-called crisis in anti-Semitism in Labour. Obviously, that was a major issue, or was going to be, and certainly seems to have been at least to some degree an issue there at the Labour Party conference. I'm curious your take, having been there, on how that issue was playing. There was the overall issue, I know, with the Carlos Latouf cartoon and different pieces like that. So sort of on the ground there with the rank and file Labour delegates, what seemed to be the reaction to what some have deemed a witch hunt?
So overall, that's not what I saw really dominating the sort of the main delegates there who were representing the various constituent Labour Party delegates. That wasn't really dominating their thoughts in terms of what was going on. There were all kinds of meetings there where absolutely the witch hunt, or what's been described as a witch hunt, was front and center. So what you have is you have the main conference, then you have fringe events, which are also officially represented at the main conference, but they're at the hotel next door to the center, the Brighton Center. Then you have an entire separate parallel group of events organized by people. It's called the World Transformed, which has union backing and backing of certain left groups. And then you had yet another fringe event, known as a free speech event, where people who've been expelled or suspended or otherwise marginalized by the Labour Party bureaucracy, where they were able to speak freely about the witch hunt, about being smeared as anti-Semites, about the path forward for the Labour Party. And bear in mind, many of these people are themselves Jewish. Jackie Walker, who's both Jewish and Black, has received horrendous level of smearing and insults. You know, Asa Wen-Stanley, who's an investigative journalist with Electronic Intifada, has been smeared as being anti-Semitic. He's been suspended from the Labour Party under some vague, you know, very sort of vague rules. So in terms of how it plays out, it depends on which sections, where you were. So I was supposed to attend a book launch, a book discussion about alleged anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. And because of what I was told, threats and abuse and harassment directed towards the staff at the bookstore, they pulled it at the last minute. And when I asked them about it, I got a statement saying, no, it had nothing to do with harassment or bullying. There just weren't enough people who booked tickets, etc. But when I spoke to the authors, they were like, yeah, that's not at all true. They were told in advance, they were told even a couple of days previously, that the event might be canceled because of the severity of the harassment, of the bullying and the threats on Twitter, on email, on phone call, and in person. And yet they did end up managing to have it next door in a theater, theater next door. So this is what we've been seeing, is that there are attacks from those pushing the witch hunt, if you like, and the smears, but there's also resistance to those attacks. The one thing that I can say is that there is definitely disappointment from the leadership not being more clear that, you know, criticism of Zionism or the State of Israel or even opposition to Zionism, which is a right-wing nationalist ideology that Israel is founded upon, does not make you anti-Semitic. It's not anti-Semitic in and of itself, and people saying so were wrong. If Corbyn had perhaps been a bit more clear about that from the get-go and consistent, I think that'd certainly be better off for some of his strongest supporters, because it's those who are consistently anti-racist, consistently anti-imperialist, and have been for years, if not decades. They're the ones who've been targeted the most, and yet they're the ones that you rely upon the most to push forward your agenda, because they're the ones who've been around the most, who are politicized the most.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very relevant point and a very important point to sort of grasp there in terms of how these issues are playing out on a number of different levels. But to swing back around to the point you were making related to immigration, please continue on that point.
Okay, so there's been a historic vote. So I don't know. I know you have over there, you have also conferences, party political conferences in the United States. And then eventually, you don't call them manifestos there, but you do have your sort of party pledges, as they were, aren't they?
Party platforms,
yes. What the name of the document is. Party platforms, yeah. Here, they're a bit more significant. Like, people remember what's in the manifestos here, right? And when they get broken, that's a significant. So if you become, when the Liberal Democrats were in government, coalition government with the Tories, and they had a party pledge to abolish tuition fees for university, and then they ended up increasing them, I think even doubling them when they were in government. That hurt them. That hurt them massively, because a big part of their support came from young people. So that's just to give you an image, an idea of how significant it is. So to give you I'll just summarize some of the key things that Labour will include in its manifesto, pledges to, quote, campaign for free movement, equality, and rights for migrants. Reject any immigration system based on incomes, migrants' utility to business, and number caps or targets. Close all immigration detention centers. Ensure unconditional right to family reunion. Maintain and extend free movement rights. End no recourse to public funds policies, so that on people's visas, you could have a visa, a work visa, and it might say no recourse to public funds, even though you pay into public funds when you pay taxes, when you contribute. There's something called a national insurance tax contribution, which comes out of your salary, which is supposed to it's supposed to be there for unemployment insurance. So that if you become unemployed, you claim from that. But you can't do that if you've got no recourse to public funds. Scrap all hostile environment measures using landlords, public service providers, or border guards, and restrictions on migrants' access to the National Health Service. Actively challenge anti-immigration narratives and extend equal rights to vote to all UK residents. So that would mean if you're a resident of the United Kingdom, and we'll see how that might play out, then you should have the equal right to vote. As one person told me, what difference should it make where you come from or what nationality you have if you live here and you contribute to the society? Does it make sense for you to be disenfranchised? This is by far and away the most radical sets of pledges and positions, policies that either the Labour Party or the Labour movement in this country has ever had. It passed unanimously. Right. So when I was there and I was filming there, you have, you know, all those in favor, people raise their hand, all those opposed. I didn't see one hand go up opposed. And even the chair at the time counting the vote said this passed unanimously by unanimous vote. So that is just to give you an idea, you know, unions sometimes were at the forefront of being anti-immigrant in this country. So can I give you a quote from one person?
Please.
A report in 1986. Yeah. History shows the record of the trade union movement to be characterized at worst by appalling racism and often by an indefensible neglect of the issues of race and equal opportunity. This is from John Wrench, at the time a professor at the University of Warwick. The uncomfortable fact remains that some of the most notorious cases of union hypocrisy and racism have occurred since the Second World War. And then they list a whole series of things of like complicity with shop stewards who were bigoted, not supporting black workers who went on strike because of racism from them levied by white workers, that this was from the top down of unions, and that while there was degree of tolerance of black and so quote unquote colored workers during the war years, First World War, Second World War, that this was understood to be temporary situation, and after the First World War, workers found themselves being sacked from everything from docks to sugar refinery, etc. So when you go from that situation, and even under Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, who pushed immigration caps, who spoke of British jobs for British workers, English jobs for English workers, if you like. So that's quite a shift. Actually, somebody else confirmed that, Jorge Martin from Socialist Appeal, has said to me, he put it this way. He said, within the Labour Party and the Labour movement, there have always been two traditions, a socialist one and a reformist one on matters like immigration, racism, imperialism, wars, etc. They've always been on opposite sides of the fence. The motion on immigration is part of the transformation of the Labour Party under Corbyn and a move away from Ed Miliband's mugs, from Gordon Brown's We Must Celebrate the Empire, from Blair's imperialist wars. And I have to say that if you look at how things were previously to where they are now, they're not perfect, but it is quite a substantial change. It's almost 180 degrees, especially if you consider the kinds of things that I was reading to you earlier, the quotes.
No, absolutely. It seems like quite the change, and certainly more for the better. And you know, one other issue that I saw there that seemed to get some support that I'm curious your thoughts about was the issue of the right of return for Palestine.
Absolutely. There's a recognition because of Britain's role as a colonial power in facilitating the destruction of historic Palestine and its colonization by settler colonialists, ethno-nationalists known as Zionists from Europe, primarily from Europe at the time. So the motion recognized that special position. They didn't use the language of settler colonialism, I don't think, and ethno-nationalism. That's me describing what Zionism is. And yeah, they recognize the right, the Palestinian right of return, which on the face of it, you'd say, well, big deal. That's enshrined under international law. The Security Council repeatedly recognized that. Of course, Palestinians have the right of return. You know, Resolution 242, et cetera, you know, clearly states, the international law states, people made refugees have the right to return to their homeland, right? But the Labour Party also, not only having its own history and its contradictions in terms of racism and being anti-immigrant, anti-black at times, it also has its connections to the origins to Zionism, to political Zionism. And for various reasons, the Labour Party has historic connections to the Zionist movement that ended up colonizing, destroying historic Palestine and founding the State of Israel. So going back to its origins. So for them, for the party as a whole, to recognize by overwhelming vote that the right of Palestinians to return to their homeland, including within, that would imply within historic, within the State of Israel now, what is Israel? That's quite a shift. And that also goes to show that however successful the witch hunt, which has smeared Jeremy Corbyn and his supporters or some of his supporters as being anti-Semitic, however successful it may have been in resulting in certain people being suspended unfairly or expelled unfairly or sidelined unfairly, you still have overwhelming support for the rights of Palestinians. And that was made incredibly clear by this vote.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now. Really appreciate you joining us here on the show, Mohammed. We are going to go to a break here, but after this break, we will return here on By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik here in Washington, D.C. So stay with us.
By any means necessary.